incredibly young, like 5 years younger than me. It's wild how like that's the guys that are going to take them to the next level.
To be fair, I think we're just getting a little bit older, man. You see these guys going up, it's like maybe they're not young, maybe they're just getting older.
You're right.
Or both, you know. All right, we are back again, basketball fans. This is Aaron Washington. You know what time it is. The Business Casual Basketball Podcast is coming back at you guys for another episode. Glad to have you all back on the mic with me. This is episode 131. We're going to be looking at the Derrick Rose trade that occurred just a few days ago, as well as three players that are approaching restricted free agency that are going to be looking at a little bit of a crossroads in their career. It's going to be time for them to kind of make or break, you know, their careers and really take advantage of the time they have to kind of make something happen, because they've been kind of trending downward and they need something to change for their careers. To help me kind of break down the situations that we'll be looking at today is Shane Young, probably the closest guy I've ever had to a co-host because of the many times he's been on my pod. But, you know, great guy, does some great work for Forbes Sports over there. Great writer, analyst, covers the game on a great, on a major scale here, you know, specializes in a, you know, a few teams like the Clippers. And, you know, he's done a lot of work on the Warriors over the past few years, but this guy knows his stuff and I'm glad to have him back on again. So Shane, glad to have your time this evening and I'm excited to jump into a few topics with you as we approach what, hard to believe, like almost the halfway point of the NBA season here.
Yeah, Aaron, thanks for having me on again. First time since you've done this video stuff, so it's been pretty cool. Thanks for having me on, and sure. I agree. I'm blown away at the speed of the season because I'm actually like not happy about it because I want to do MVP leaderboards. I want to do like all-star stuff. It's like, man, like where's the time whenever you try to do like daily stuff around the league? Where's the time to do the macro level stuff when we're already 40% of the way through?
Yeah, it's wild, man. It really is wild. But I'm glad that at least the postponements have calmed down and things are kind of starting to resemble a little bit of the normal routine. Fans are coming back in arenas. So like it's a good time, man. I'm glad that we're kind of establishing a little bit of a rhythm here after kind of a hectic start to the season. Why don't you say we get into a little bit of the content here for today, starting with the Derrick Rose trade that occurred just a few days ago here. So I wanted to look at this first from the Knicks perspective to kind of see how they've made out in this trade. And this is pretty interesting because, of course, Rose is coming back to the Big Apple and he's reuniting with old coach Thibodeau there. And, you know, they have a lot of history and it's really wild. It's almost like at this point, it's like, is Rose like, are they like chasing this guy? Because like, you know, he was in Minnesota, you know, they were in Chicago and now they're in New York here. So you got some initial impressions of this trade? Like, did anybody come out on top or, you know, do we just going to have to kind of wait and see how this shakes out?
It's the ultimate wait and see how it shakes out because the Pistons definitely did not like, you know, they didn't need him for the long term, which really nobody does need Rose for the long term. But the Pistons, it made no sense for them to just hang on and just keep him, you know, whether it was off the bench or like in a more prominent role there. It just made no sense from that perspective. Mm-hmm. The Knicks, it's something that it's kind of just like a stopgap, like a filler for now. You know, they just need something, which I don't even think they needed his particular strengths. I didn't think they really needed that. But especially like if you consider what the long-term goal should be for the Knicks. But we know that the Knicks head coach, Tom Thibodeau, is not a long-term guy. It's more of a, you know, he wants to win now. And hey, you have to give him credit. You have to give Tips credit for coming in. And, you know, what are they in the standings now? You know, 11-15, that's probably 8 games better than I thought they would be. You know, 9 games better than I thought they'd be at this point. Yeah. So it's, you know, I think I even projected them at 22 or 21 wins. So, you know, they're 10 away from that. And we're not even halfway through the season. So that's pretty good. You know, I'm just curious about your thoughts about it because we've only seen, what, 1 or 2 games of Rose? One, two?
Yeah, I think one. Yeah, I think
he played, one, like that Heat game
last night. And yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like I don't know if it's going to be something that it's even worth talking about in the realm of is it going to make a big difference for them? It's just kind of like a style and preference thing. Like, you know, they want someone to get downhill a little bit more, but what the Knicks really needed was shooting. Like they need a lot of shooting because I think they have, you know, Emmanuel Quickley, who we're going to talk about to get downhill and get into the paint. It's just, you know, they haven't surrounded that unit with RJ Barrett and Julius Randle, haven't surrounded that unit with a lot of shooting.
Not at all. You know, it's been a real struggle for them offensively and defensively. They made some real strides. And I think Thibodeau has a part to play in that. You know, that's kept them very competitive. So even though they've taken some L's as of late, it keeps them in the game because they kind of grind things down. And when the offense inevitably kind of gets staggered and stagnant, you know, it's going to keep them at least in the fold to be able to kind of close the game. My initial thoughts from this deal, at least from the Knicks perspective, is that, you know, I'm kind of with you. It's kind of a stopgap, but I think the New York is really feeling the pressure to make the playoffs. And they know that this is as close as they've been, at least to this part of the season, in a while. So they know that the window is open a little bit. There's 10 teams now that are eligible to make the playoffs now with the play-in. So their hopes are a little bit more open. The door is a little bit more open this season.
Yeah.
So they wanted to take advantage of that by getting a player that can help them win now and possibly kind of prop that door open a little bit more when it comes to making the playoffs. My major concern here, though, is, of course, the Quickley situation. Going back to their last game, it looks like the minutes were pretty even between Quickley, Rose, and Payton. Elfrid Payton still started. He played 26 minutes. Quickley was at 21, and Rose played 20. So it looks like everybody's kind of like in equal footing as far as the rotation goes. But I'm curious to see how it develops because, you know, we know how much Tibbs loves Rose and how much he loves playing his best players a lot of minutes. I'm curious to see if that kind of starts to trickle upward as we get farther into the action. Do you feel like Thibodeau is going to fall into that trap a little bit here as it comes to playing guys a little bit more? I'm just hoping that doesn't happen because Quickley is definitely one of the best prospects from that position they've had in a while. So he needs his run in this situation.
I do think it's going to happen. I think we have enough evidence that suggests it will happen. And it doesn't help that, you know, for this instance, it doesn't help that the Knicks are only one game out of the eighth spot. And you said, you know, you only have to get to 10 to really get into the play-in situation, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like that's even more of a window that Tibbs is going to see that allows him to overplay maybe the veterans and not play the younger guys. You know, it's just something like I don't think hiring Thibodeau is – I don't think you're thinking about like, okay, he's going to be good for the player development because he's always just played the veteran guy. So when they made that hire, it's like, okay, what can you expect? You can't expect Thibodeau, who is, you know, he's been around the league for 20, 30 years to, you can't expect him to just change. Right. He's going to be the same guy he's always been. So really it comes down to the management and that's, you know, that's what they hired. And then Thibodeau is going to give his opinion on players that he wants. No doubt that he was reached out to by management probably about the Rose thing. And that's why it happened. So, you know, I do agree. I think I'm a big fan of Emmanuel Quickley. You know, I was watching watching Clippers Knicks really closely last week or a week and a half ago. And, you know, all the Clippers could do after the game was rave about Quickley. I mean, you had Paul George talking about how he, you know, what he loves about Quickley is the fearlessness to get inside and not be scared to try anything, whether it's a floater, whether it's pulling up, attacking fully attacking the rim. He said that Kier looks fearless. Then you had Patrick Patterson talking about how he has always been a fan of him from afar because he can do many different things. I don't necessarily think Quickley is going to evolve into the player De'Aaron Fox is or something like that. You know, just sticking with that Kentucky connection there. I think Fox and John Wall and all these guys, like, I don't think Quickley's ever going to be that, but he needs the chance to at least see if that can be a real possibility. And we do have to say, like, Quickley's usage is right there with Randall at 27.3% this year. It's just the minutes haven't been there. So like, he's like, you know, 500 or 600 minutes under Randall, which is understandable from a certain perspective, but it's like, I think, you know, Quickley is at 419 minutes through 22 games. I would like to see that be about 500, 550 right now. So, you know, I think Tibbs has underplayed him. And sadly, that's probably not going to change. As you said, the minutes distribution with Rose and Quickley was pretty even, you said, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd like to see Quickley get a lot more minutes than Rose, but I can understand if you're leaving the decision to Tibbs, you've made the wrong decision in the first place.
Yep. It's like you said, what can you expect? And somebody with that many years in the league, it's kind of like it is what it is at this point. He's going to play his vets. He's going to kind of lean on those guys. And maybe even more than that, it's going to be the top players. So like RJ Barrett is going to play 35 plus minutes. Randall is going to play 38 minutes or whatever the case is. So those guys are very important. And then speaking of veterans, you know, Alex here has a pretty good question on the veterans here, the situation. So he wants to know our thoughts on Rose's veteran impact on Quickly and some of those other young guys. Mitchell Robinson is pretty young, RJ Barrett. And I think it is going to be something that is, you can't overstate the impact of having a guy like Rose come in with all the experience. And even more than his experience, I think resilience. Like, he's coming in as a guy that suffered major injuries, several major injuries, and here he is still in the league all these years later. I want to say it's his 14th season at this point. And if you had asked us back in 2012, you know, when he suffered that ACL, like, would he be playing in 2021? I think most people would say no. Mm-hmm. At some point, the knees would give out, he'd break down, you know, he called it a career, and nobody would have blamed him if he did. But here he stands in a position to contribute for a team looking to make the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. You know, that's significant for New York. And even more than that, you know, he has guys behind him. You know, Quickly is going to be the major, you know, guy that's going to benefit from this, because Quickly comes in and he has a lot of skills. And I think Rose can kind of help him along because they have something in common. They're both very aggressive players. And that's where Rose made his name, was driving downhill and stuff like that. So if he can come in and kind of show Quickly the ropes and, you know, learn how to finish a little bit better in there and use that floater that's already very good, like, he's going to be even better off for it.
Well, I'd be curious to know, because, you know, that question from Alex there got me thinking. I don't really remember. Maybe you can correct me. I don't really remember any specific instances of players, like young players, coming out and like, you know, praising like Rose's leadership or you know, the types of you know, mentor skills that he had and what they learned from him. I'm sure there have been cases. I'm sure there have been players that have said, you know, Rose definitely helped. I just have to go back and look at the Wolves and look at the Bulls and you know, Detroit from last year. Luke Kennard played a little bit with them before getting hurt. Or maybe they missed each other entirely. I know, like, they might have crossed paths a little bit because Luke Kennard played like 23 games and then got hurt. So maybe it's something that we can ask those guys, you know, throughout the media sessions and stuff. But I'm not really sure. Rose doesn't strike me as someone that a lot of guys would necessarily pick up a lot of things from. You know, Rose has kind of played his same style since having those injuries. In terms of, you know, not very explosive anymore, but can still get to the rim and get downhill. So, you know, maybe when it comes to like handling yourself professionally, stuff like that, maybe, you know, I could see that from a younger guy's perspective, like Quickly and RJ Barrett, who RJ Barrett's so talented, but, you know, he hasn't been put in the best positions. Like, it amazes me how he finishes plays sometimes despite having the worst spacing any 21-year-old could ever have. You know, I just, going back to the first point, I would rather have had the Knicks trade for adequate shooting that can at least get at least just space onto the wing, into the perimeter and the corners, and allow the Knicks ball handlers and shot creators to actually get some breathing room or run a pick and roll without the fear or without seeing the low man, without seeing the weak man, the weak side guy hugging in because they know that they don't have shooting. So, you know, it gets hard. Even with Rose on the roster, it gets hard to run a lot of those pick and roll sets and deliver the ball into the paint whenever you know that your weak side guys are just going to be pulled into the paint because you have no shooting.
Exactly, man. And, you know, there's a lot to kind of digest from this, but it's like, essentially at the end of the day, they traded away a guy that's, you know, explosive, that loves to get to the rim, you know, Dennis Smith Jr., terrible shooter.
He wasn't playing anyway, you know?
No. So, I mean, it's not a team. It's not like they were giving up a lot. They gave up a second round pick to get Rose, and it's almost like they got a slight, like, upgrade from Dennis Smith, but it's the same type of player. And, you know, it's like you said, they needed something a little bit different. The spacing it has been terrible. But at least they've been able to kind of carve out an identity, because when you're a team that's been so bad for so long, like New York, that's where the rise starts. You have to find something to hang your hat on every night. And at least they're kind of made some headway in that area. And it's something that's going to, I think, carry them, if not to a playoff appearance, at least somewhere close, which is more than we've been able to say for quite a while. But speaking of Dennis Smith, we have to look at this from the other perspective. So, of course, we have Detroit's situation, and they grabbed another young asset who can potentially have some untapped potential. You know, Dennis Smith, it's hard to believe. He's only 23 years old at this point. It's his fourth season. And, you know, he's missed some time. You know, last season, you know, he dealt with some personal issues and he's missed time. This season, he's barely played. He was in the G League, which I give him a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for him for really requesting the opportunity to play in the G League, because not many players will say that, like actually raise their hand and say, like, send me back down there so I can play more minutes. So that really stuck out to me.
Especially the top eight pick, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, the optics of that can be a little bit sketchy from the outside, but you really got to look deep at it and say, like, this guy really wants to get better and he wants to have the opportunity. So now, you know, after doing that, he's going to have the opportunity in Detroit, because looking at their rotation, Killian Hayes, who they basically gave the keys to the offense to at the point guard spot, he's out for the foreseeable future with a hip injury. And then after that, it's really sketchy. DeLon Wright is more of a combo guard. He's like off guard most of the time. And then their only other point guard, I think, on the roster is Sabian Lee, another rookie. He's only played 70 minutes. And then you could throw in Frank Jackson, but he's played even less to this point, only 39 minutes for the entire season. So looking at the depth chart, I think DSJ is by default going to play a lot of minutes for them. And why not, right? Because they're sitting at, I think it's 6-18 at this point. You might as well throw him out there, see what he's got, because the season is lost from a playoff perspective. But they can still use this opportunity to develop, like, DSJ and these other guys they've drafted so far, Isaiah Stewart, who's had some flashes. So they have a lot to figure out as far as who's going to be their future. And this is the perfect opportunity for them. And, you know, from that perspective, I think it's a good trade. You know, of course you would like to see maybe someone else that can maybe make an immediate impact for someone like Rose. But at the end of the day, you really have to look at what Detroit is prioritizing in this deal. And it lines up with the whole reason as to why they're playing the rest of the season, which is its development. So from that perspective, I don't really have many complaints on this deal.
It reminds me somewhat of what they did with Josh Jackson, or what teams have done with Josh Jackson in terms of just give him a chance. Mm-hmm. There's no risk, because if it doesn't pan out, you just part ways, and then you just have your guys that are already on the roster that need reps and the ball in their hands to succeed and see what they have on, you know, see what their abilities can hold. But with Dennis Smith, I'm just kind of out. I don't think he's going to last. I don't think he's going to be in the league in a couple of years. Maybe that's just the pessimist view I have, but you know, I think what we've seen throughout his 160 games is poor decision-making for the most part, poor shooting. Cause if you attempt 600 threes, Aaron, and you're under 32%, you know, 600 is not a small volume. It's 600 threes. You know, it's not high either. I mean, considering he's only been in the league for three or four years, there's still hope that he could develop into a decent or competent average shooter. I'm just not going to believe that. So I don't see him carving out minutes within Detroit, especially if, you know, Dwayne Casey, he's an interesting coach because he wants to win badly. He wants to be in a playoff mix badly, but they don't have the ability to do so when they're paying Blake Griffin max money and he's not performing at that level. And when a lot of their promising guys are still incredibly young, like 5 years younger than me, it's wild how like that's the guys that are going to take them to the next level.
To be fair, I think we're just getting a little bit older, man. You see these guys maybe they're not young, maybe we're just getting older.
Both,
you know.
So the Pistons are simultaneously in a good spot when it comes to some of the pieces you see on the roster, and then also like in a bad spot because you don't know yet what's going to be their way out. Like we don't know which one of these guys is going to click and become a star, if any of them. But we know that three or four of them have potential to do so. And we know that Jeremy Grant, who just signed that big long-term deal, was it 4 years?
3 years. I
think three years.
60,
three years.
Around 60
yeah,
million.
3 years. Yeah. So we know Jeremy Grant, who has a couple more years left there. He seems to love it. He seems to love the community. He went on the Low Post and was talking all about like how he chose to go there, you know, for a lot of off the court reasons as well as on the court. Mm-hmm. We know that he wants the ball in his hands a lot. I think they're the ultimate wait and see team, because if they're still looking this poor on the court next year, like, you know, at the halfway point next year, you can say it's a failure of what they've done. But right now, we kind of just don't even know. And it makes me sad to watch Blake Griffin, a guy that, think about it. You mentioned that they have a lot of ball handlers, or a lot of guys that can create, but none of them are elite at creating, right? But some, like DeLon Wright, he can create. We've seen it in Toronto and Dallas. So it kind of makes me sad that Blake Griffin, a guy that transformed into a really, really good passer, like put him at the elbow, make him your offensive hub. He can read the floor pretty well, and he can make timely reads. They have a lot of guys that you could see cutting and making being play finishers for Blake Griffin, but he can't stay on the floor, and he can't provide enough downhill mobility to really make it worthwhile. So, you know, I think if he was at the 2017-18 level, 2018-19 level, if he was at the 2018-19 level that he was at, I think this team would look pretty good offensively for certain stretches, because they have a lot of good athletes that can cut and drive and finish. But without Blake being able to put the pressure on everybody, all these guys, even if Dennis Smith Jr. cracks the rotation, all these guys are just going to be stuck in the mud to me.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, when you have Jeremy Grant as your kind of do or die guy, that's not an indictment on Jeremy Grant. He's been fantastic. I mean, a guy that's upped his, you know, minutes, his possessions, everything to that degree, and he's still maintaining almost the same percentages, shooting percentages. It's really a testament to how much he is embraced this opportunity and taken advantage of it. So that's great, but it's probably not the guy you want, you know, when it comes down to every game, you know, just dominating the action, just throwing everything into. And it's like you said, it's going to be tough for other players to kind of take advantage of that, because Jeremy Grant is not the Blake Griffin who was a distributor. You can kind of like flow the offense through and other guys get opportunities. That's not quite in his game. Even now, I think he's only at like 2 assists a game right now, or maybe a little bit under. So it just goes to show you that, these other guys are going to have problems within that area. But again, for the Pistons, it comes down to what are they looking to do? So, of course, they got a second-round pick in this deal, which should be overlooked. They were actually missing a lot of second-round picks. I was surprised with a team like Detroit. They're actually missing almost every second-round pick between now and 2026.
Well, they sent a lot to Clippers and Blazers, I believe. I sent a lot of Clippers for, was it the Luke Kennard deal?
I think it was, Luke Kennard. So they're missing a few picks in there, so that helps kind of replenish that a little bit. And, for the Pistons, I mean, they're basically saying, like, hey, let's go take a shot. Let's take a gamble on some guys that are falling out of favor with the respective teams, to see if they have anything left in the tank, anything left to offer. And, it could work out for them. They have some assets. They have Jeremy Grant, they have Killian Hayes coming in from injury after injury, and he's probably going to be, you know, this season was rough even before he got hurt, but I think, you know, as far as like a 3-4 year outlook, he still has a lot of promise. And even if Dennis Smith can maybe find a way to carve out like a six-man role, like something like a backup point guard, similar to maybe like Trey Burke did, because I think Trey Burke was almost out of the league completely. He Burke found a way.
Amazing in the first round last year.
Yeah, he absolutely was, man. Like, he really took advantage. I think he really made his calling card on, I think it was like mid-range shooting. He turned himself into like almost like a modern like Allen Iverson or something, where he's just like taking advantage of like jump shots from like 10 to 15 feet.
And all I know is he and Seth Curry completely cooked the Clippers. All I know, that's all I know.
Yeah, man. Like, he had some real skill that I think he just needed the right opportunity. Like, a lot of times it comes down to opportunity, and some of these guys just need time to develop and mature. You go through things, you see things, you figure out exactly what it takes to be an NBA rotation player. And sometimes that's lost on these guys that come in as like a top 10 pick, and they think they're going to rely on athleticism. It'd be great. But I think, you know, those areas that you pointed out are definitely relevant for him. He's going to have to figure out how to take care of the ball. You know, his turnover percentages every season have been pretty bad. You know, he's been in like the 30 percentile or less as far as turnover percentage. And then he's been sub 50% effective field goal percentage. So I took effective field goal percentage because I know you, Shane, you're not a fan of the field goal percentage. So we're cutting that out. You know, that's banned. I find myself, even when I'm doing these podcasts, you know, by myself, or, you know, aside from you here, it's like that voice keeps popping into my head. It's like, don't use field goal percentage. Well, so I just like sway away from that completely.
people are on teasing me on Twitter saying that it's the Shane splits now, and all you have to look at to know that it's a horrible way to do it. You know, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, and whatever. All you have to know is that like Steph Curry would have to shoot like 47 or 48% from three just to have his field goal percentage at the 50 mark, because he shoots so many shots that are like a 3-pointer, an elite 3-point shot is 40% or above, right? Mm-hmm. So like inherently, if you look at someone's field goal percentage and it says 41%, that's like, man, that's pretty bad. That's pretty low. Like, you know, only hitting a fourth of your shots. Or you're only hitting 40% of your shots. It's like, man, that needs to be better. But if you look at their twos, then obviously it just got better.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And it's a very simple way to look at what percentages mean.
Effective field goal, as you said, is a good way. If you don't want to incorporate free throws, which, you know, I think for Dennis Smith, part of him, you know, he struggled at the line as well. And that was a big indication. Dennis Smith, all throughout his Dallas and Knicks career, never cracked 70% of the line. And I think free throw percentage is pretty indicative of like how your set shot looks and how your rhythm is and your technique and your flow. So like, if you're not a good foul shooter, I really struggle to find a person that's been able to shoot threes at a decent clip that couldn't hit free throws at a decent clip. So I think it's a good indicator in that regard.
Exactly. And I was really kind of shocked when I was looking at the percentages. It's like, this guy wasn't even league average, I think, from anywhere on the floor. So Cleaning the Glass has their numbers and they kind of put things into perspective. So they show you percentage and then they show you kind of where they fall in the league as it pertains to league average. And I looked at mid-range, looked at three, I looked at the rim. At the rim, I mean, he kind of got up to near league average, but it's like you said, the free throw percentage, the 3-point percentage, all of those were 40%, you know, league-wide, 30%, 20%. So that's a major hiccup for a player.
It almost makes me wish like every one of these players that's in his situation that can't shoot, really can't play defense that well either, despite being a really hyper athletic guy. It makes me wish all these guys could go to the Spurs and have the Spurs player development, or go to the Raptors with their player development. But no, they get stuck in Detroit, New York, and it just seems like all these guys that struggle are stuck in the situations that they don't have the adequate coaching or player development.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
Yeah, it really is a shame, man, because franchises like that, it seems like guys jump in and they immediately kind of take off. They know their role. Yeah. Like, look at the Spurs this season. I've been really impressed by their development. Keldon Johnson, like Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray. Like, you look at all of their young players, it's like, okay, they're not good. Maybe none of them will be stars. Like, maybe none of them will hit an all-NBA team, but they're all trending upward. They're all learning things. They're all incorporating new skills into their game every season. They're all finding themselves, and that's the beauty of it. And, you know, it's reason why we have to kind of take things and really look at it at face value. Like when it comes to Dennis Smith Jr., you know, I mean, he's had some of the craziest dunk attempts, right? Mm-hmm. When we look at his career so far, like he's had some crazy missed dunks, some crazy made dunks. Like he's probably one of the most explosive and like fun players to watch if he can just get all the way to the rim. But the problem is when he gets there, he's not really converting that well. And he can't take advantage of easy opportunities. Yeah. So if you can't convert at the rim, if you can't convert at the free throw line, it's like, where are you going to generate points? And it's not like he's an incredible playmaker either. He's not going to compensate for that on defense or by making other guys better. things like that. So it's just a tough sell when it comes to giving this guy minutes, but this is it for him, man. Like Detroit is, you know, might be his last stop, and whatever it takes, he needs to kind of find a way to be more efficient, whether that's rewriting a shot, because if I'm not mistaken, didn't Dennis Smith, I don't know if he reworked his shot, but like, isn't there some kind of hitch in his shot, something that really makes it hard for him to be consistent?
Can't really remember, but I just know that it, I actually feel like it looked pretty good. It looked compatible. It's something where he could never get a good enough clip, even on wide open threes. I'd be curious to see that he probably shot sub 30 or sub 35% on wide open threes. So it's something where when he got drafted by Dallas, like they kind of thought, oh, this is the guy of the future. Now, how crazy is that, that they went from Dennis Smith Jr. being like the vision of the future to now they already know their future for the next 15 years. They already know who it is.
Luka and Dennis Smith Jr. in the backcourt, man. It's almost like it was yesterday, but it was like so long ago at the same time. It's really weird how that works, man. Things change so fast. But, you know, while we're on the subject of dynamic guards that are struggling with, you know, percentages and being efficient, I mean, of course, there's Lonzo Ball. And, you know, we made this like seamless transition into the Crossroads segment because we're looking at players that they're in their fourth seasons. So at this point, they can't sign a contract extension. Maybe their team and the player couldn't come to an agreement on a number that made sense for both sides. So now they're playing out this season knowing that there is not a contract waiting for them at the end. So, of course, that's motivation. Of course, that's another reason as to why they should go out and want to do as well as possible the rest of the season. But to this point, you know, these for various reasons, I think these players haven't exactly shown that so far. So in Lonzo Ball's case, the big problem for him is being aggressive. And I think it's almost something that like Ben Simmons has struggled with. But Ben Simmons is like, well, I have elite defense. You know, I can rebound the ball. I can pass at a great level. I can do other things. I can finish at the rim. But with Lonzo, I looked at his rim frequency. He's at 23%. I mean, that's the lowest of his career. So he's in the 33rd percentile. He just does not want to go to the rim for whatever reason. And that's what's holding him back, I think. You have to be aggressive with that size. He's fairly explosive. He's pretty crafty, but he just doesn't take advantage of that enough. So that's what's holding Lonzo back. And it's a big reason as to why he might not be long for New Orleans. Maybe Chicago comes in and gets him. But I think it's tough to see him, envision him staying with New Orleans past this season.
I think a big thing with Lonzo, at least from the games I've seen, not necessarily all this year, but the last couple of years with the Pelicans, when he gets to the rim, I think he's a little bit too unselfish. And I think he breaks down the defense, gets into the rim, or it gets to the rim, and he's able to go up and finish or get fouled, you know, create something for himself. But he sees that collapsed defense, and I think it's been ingrained in him throughout his whole life. You see that with LaMelo. Like they've both been taught to pass out and to create open shots for others. And I think that's just, you know, I think Lonzo, if he had a little bit more like, I guess, decisiveness to go and search for his own offense when he gets into the paint, then it wouldn't be a big problem for him. Then he would get more reps at the foul line. Because right now, you know, I think his free throw rate is, you know, 0.90, which is like, you know, for a free throw rate to be 0.90 is horrific. I mean, you need to get a good proportion of your shots or a good proportion of your opportunities at the foul line. You know, for most guards out there, I'm not looking at it, but for most guards out there, you know, if your free throw rate is like 0.3 or 0.4, you know, that means that not half of your possessions are drawing fouls. Like, you know, Jimmy Butler is the king of drawing fouls when he drives inside. I mean, this guy's free throw rate was off the charts last year. I just think you need a happy medium with that. Lonzo has to get there more, but he's not searching that out. He doesn't want that. It is a little odd to me. I think I think Lonzo might have the strangest like offensive profile of any guard I've seen for a while, because especially point guards, because he has no problem taking threes, you know, per 36 minutes, almost 9 threes per 36 minutes for someone that couldn't shoot. That's insane. In what world is Lonzo taking more threes per 36 minutes than Paul George? Like that's insane.
Dude, that is crazy.
So and he's, it's not like he's firing and they're not going in. I mean, they're at a respectable clip there. It just,
yeah.
But no matter, I think this touches on a good point, especially how you said that he might not be long for New Orleans. No matter what he shoots from outside, I just don't think defenses are going to be like, okay, beat me with that shot. Yeah, just beat me with that shot, go under screens. I don't care as long as we're not giving up paint opportunities. So right. I think they will end up trading him at some point, just because, like, you can't max him out. You can't give him a big deal. You can't give him a big contract extension when he's providing so value. So I think they'll eventually try to turn him into someone via trade. I think they'll try to flip him for someone that fits better with Zion and better with Ingram, because the fit there is just not, it's not great. I mean, the Pelicans are fourth offensively in their last 15 or so games. So that's encouraging. I just think that there's more to be desired there. And I think if you try to flip Lonzo for someone that fits a little bit better with Zion, now I don't know what that could be. Maybe you have some ideas here, but I think that they might be better off. Both parties might be better off.
Absolutely, man. I think, you know, we're talking about somebody that can fit a little bit better. I mean, it has to be somebody that can at least put some pressure on the defense, you know, draw some fouls. I mean, just be a factor offensively, because even if you have talents like Ingram and Zion that can do so much for you, if they're dealing with extra coverage as a result of Lonzo's indecisiveness and just not wanting to get inside the arc and make things happen for himself, you know, it's almost like it just has a domino effect for the rest of the roster. So it has to be somebody that's willing to get in there and make things happen, still be an adequate shooter, somebody that can make the defense at least respect them from there. And I think I saw a piece, I don't know if it was 538, if someone said something about this. It's probably actually Seth Partnow on The Athletic, but he said it's less about your percentages outside as to like what makes defenses respect you. And I think he was saying it's more about like how eager you are to shoot. Now, for Lonzo, in Lonzo's case, he actually is pretty eager, but I almost think it's like he just built up the stigma about him, this reputation over the years that people just have ingrained in their minds. So unless he shoots some astronomical percentage, they're going to say like, well, you know, he's probably not going to kill us from there. He might hit a couple, he might hit two or three, but in the grand scheme of things, is that really the worst thing ever for us?
Yeah.
And, you know, something that's interesting here, I want to take a look at this comment that Alex posted just a minute ago, but he's trying to just kind of think about what Lonzo could be as it pertains to the rest of his career. Can he become a Jason Kidd-esque player? Now, you're thinking about Jason Kidd's profile. Great passer. Lonzo has that. Jason Kidd was a pretty good defender. Lonzo has that as well. But, you know, I mean, and Jason Kidd actually did develop a jump shot later in his career, which Lonzo is doing. But, I mean, you know, we're talking about just Jason Kidd here, guys. Like, he was way more aggressive. He made things happen. Lonzo just doesn't have that in his repertoire right now. He's not as aggressive. Like, how do you feel about that comparison? Is that something he should strive to be like? Somebody that you can kind of model his game after a little bit?
I think a lot of point guards should strive to do that, so strive to be that type of player. It's like, do you have the adequate skill set in order to do it? Like you said, like I think it would take him a long time. What are we in year five? Four? We're in year four of Lonzo. And I don't know if he can necessarily be that. Because like Jason Kidd, people forget, Lonzo's a really good transition player, but it's more so like the pass, and he wants to give it up early. He wants to give it up early. Yep. Kidd, if I'm not mistaken, like, you know, watching him a lot throughout his career towards the back, you know, the latter part, you know, he wanted to get it and go, and he would put pressure on the defense all 94 feet. You know, he would want to attack. And then if the pass was there, he would make it. If not, he would take it himself. So I think Kidd had a little bit more like decisiveness and more selfishness, if you could say that, in terms of getting his own. He never averaged a lot of points, but it's kind of just the game by game, possession by possession mentality. I don't think Lonzo has that right now. Yeah. And, you know, something we were talking about, I just looked like Lonzo has played 645 minutes. He has driven to the rim 106 times. Okay. 645 minutes, 106 drives. By comparison, his brother, LaMelo, only 50 more minutes than Lonzo, but over 150 more drives.
Wow.
So it's like,
that's staggering.
It is. Like LaMelo is actively pushing and actively trying to get all the way to the restricted area to make something happen. Now, LaMelo's free throw rate is a lot higher too, like 32 free throw attempts within those 700 minutes and 260 drives. So Lonzo, like, I think like even Jason Kidd would say, look, attack, like attack, and yeah, everything else will open up for you. And exactly, and maybe he'll have more space to take those three-pointers, and maybe he'll start to get 40% efficiency from deep. So, you know, I think Lonzo is a good, I love how we went from Dennis Smith Jr. And some of the other guys we were talking about to Lonzo. I don't think Lonzo's nearly in the same boat when it comes to this is the finished product. I think we're going to see a lot better Lonzo throughout the years, especially like when he gets to like year 7 or 8, I think the dude will be a stud. It's just, I don't know if the Pelicans want to wait for that, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. I think somewhere like Chicago might be a better place for him, because if you're playing alongside a guy like Zach LaVine that commands all that attention, maybe give Lonzo a little bit more room to kind of be more aggressive in the paint. They have shooters, you know, they have Wendell Carter. He definitely has the ability to space the floor. Kobe White can do that. You know, he'll let it fly. I mean, he's not shy about doing that. You know, they're a pretty dangerous team in transition, and that's where Lonzo thrives. They have some athletic specimens that can make that happen. And then, of course, there is another player in that fold that can, you know, provide him some extra spacing on the floor. And that's who we're going to look at next. That's going to be Lauri Markkanen. So Lauri Markkanen has had a pretty interesting career to this point. I mean, he's had so many flashes, man. And I feel bad for the Bulls, because it seems like every time he gets going, and Wendell Carter applies to this too, something happens to derail that progress that they show. It's like, okay, Lauri finally figured it out. He knows how to, you know, kind of balance out being aggressive with spacing out and being that pick and pop guy. You know, he's in a rhythm. He's getting accurate from downtown. I mean, he's helping the team win games. And then something happens. It's like, now it's a shoulder, and before it was a knee and something else. So he's missed an average of he's played an average of 56 games his first 3 years. And this season, out of 26, he's already missed 10. So, I mean, I just struggle to see, like, what that means for him long-term for this team. Will a team still bet on him at restricted free agency? Absolutely. Like, something, a guy that comes out here and he can space the floor to that degree, it's something that somebody's going to offer him an opportunity. And a lot of teams are going to have cap space this summer. So I'm assuming that somebody's going to come in and offer him 15 mil, something like that. Cause I mean, shooting is at a premium. Yeah. That definitely commands a higher price tag. So interested to see what you think about this. Is, you know, more likely to stay than Lonzo, less likely? How are you feeling about that one?
People might disagree, I think, because I've heard a lot of people say that they think Lauri is leaving and that he'll be gone. But I think the Bulls like him. I have no inside info on that. I think that that's a marriage that we can see lasting. I think I'm just a little bit biased because I love his shot profile and I love everything about Lauri Markkanen whenever he's actually on the court and doing well. As you said, he's had hiccups here and there. Can't really stay healthy for a long-term perspective, but I do love the guy. Aaron, I'm going to give you a little question here. Out of his 185 shots this year, okay, 185 shots, how many have come from mid-range? So from 10 feet to 3, 185 shots, how many from mid-range?
So 185, we're talking about mid-range, kind of like closer to the paint. Yeah. I'm assuming it's pretty low.
10 feet to long, 10 feet to the three-point line. So anything out of 10 feet.
I'll say 40.
Eight.
Wow.
Eight. I love the shot profile. I love the shot profile, man. I love it. Like,
that is extreme.
He gets to the rim. He gets to the rim despite – the notion and the perception that he's only just a guy that's going to gun from three. He is, I believe, 80% on 80 plus shots at the rim this year. So it's like, or no, 50 shots at the rim. So 80% on 50 shots at the rim. So, I mean, like, it's a decent diet of the shots. You would want it to be stronger. You want him to be more all around type of force offensively. But I do like what we see. I think he takes good shots. I think he's a really good, tough shot maker. And that, you know, Zach LaVine is also like one of the best tough shot makers in the league now. Yeah. And they have two guys when healthy that could do that. So I think, if I was the Bulls, I think a lot of Bulls fans are ready to write him off and just ship him out. Mm-hmm. So people aren't going to like to hear that, but I think they should keep. I think it should be a mutual partnership there, and I would just like to keep him. But he has to, after this shoulder injury, I believe it's a shoulder injury, after this, he has to remain healthy and durable.
Yeah, he's got to get on the court, man. And I will say, I feel the Bulls fans' pain. I can understand why they're ready to ship him out. Being here, over here on the Heat side, I remember Justice Winslow getting hurt. I think it was like his hip or something, which he still has not come back from, which is crazy. But he got hurt and he was out for I don't know how many games he missed before he got traded. It might have been 10, 12 games, something like that. And, you know, he'd had problems staying healthy. And I was just kind of at the point, I was just like, okay, I just want somebody that's just going to be there. Somebody said, like, I can't remember who said it, but the best ability is availability. It really means something in the NBA when you can go out and you can actually be a product. You can be the best player of all time. But if you're not on the court, it doesn't mean anything. So for marketing, it really would help to have him on the court. And I really would like to see him have more time to develop with Wendell Carter. Like that experiment hasn't had a ton of time to work out because wouldn't you know it, they're both hurt. So, I mean, like they both get hurt every season. And I feel like the Bulls, like they got to maybe pick one of those guys. Like, I don't know if I want to keep both because you have two players that are that injury prone. I'd want to maybe move on from one of them. That's just coming from my perspective.
This has to be frustrating for Billy Donovan. Last year, I'm trying to remember in my head. Last year, I don't think OKC dealt with any major injuries at all. Like, I think Chris Paul was healthy. Shea was healthy. Dennis Schroeder was healthy. Sure. Mm-hmm. They didn't get really Dort going until the end there. But, like, they were durable, and that's why they got to the 5 seed.
Right.
You know, Billy Donovan comes in, is trying to take on more of a player development role now instead of a win now role, although they do want to win now. It's more about the process now with him. And he has guys that are missing games and big, you know, two starters and Laurie and Wendell. It's like, man, that's got to be tough for him. And I definitely feel bad for Billy Donovan in that regard. But hey, you know, I know we didn't plan on talking about Zach LaVine specifically, but I mean, like that dude is, I think he's the perfect example of when you kind of shoehorn a guy into this is only what Zach LaVine's going to be for the rest of his career. And then he just decides to be one of the best pull-up shooters in the league. And it's like, this guy always had some flashes here and there, but it's like now I think what we're seeing is monumental progress from LaVine. And that's only encouraging if you're Billy Donovan, because, you know, Billy hasn't really coached someone like that. You know, I mean, Kevin Durant for 1 year, but it's like Paul George for a small cup of coffee, right? Before PG decided to get out. But like, it's cool that he is going from those guys to another guard that can really put pressure on defense coming off of screens. And that's only going to help Markkanen if he's on the court setting screens. I mean, that pick and pop threat would be deadly.
That is deadly. I love like his progression. I think he's like knocking on the door of star status because you're looking at his numbers. You're looking at his just ability to make tough shots. I mean, that's kind of like one of the identifying factors. One main factors of a star is like, give the ball to him, end of the game, whatever case is, go get a bucket. And he had 46 in this last game, you know, there to make a really big stand. I think it was against New Orleans. So, yeah, I mean, him and Lauri Markkanen, I think that's great. I think they're gonna try to keep Markkanen. Hopefully they can kind of come to an agreement, restricted free agency.
They were far apart last time they were doing it. They were just like, let's hang up the phone. Let's not even talk about it right now because, you know, Lauri thinks he's worth a lot more. And the Bulls are like, look, dude, you've played X amount of games.
You're not there. I think it comes down to his shooting, Shane, like looking at his, you know, his shot profile, like you said, you know, his ability to be a great shooter. I think it's only like Davis Bertans. That's probably somebody he brought up in negotiations. He's like, Davis Bertans cut $80 million. Like, I'm a great shooter. Give me $80 million. And they're saying like, well, for one, you haven't played. And number two, I mean, he shot like 43% or something last season on like 7 attempts a game, something crazy. So like, you're not in that stratosphere, man. That's probably something along the lines of what caused the division there. But for Markkanen, I'm hopeful that they can kind of come to agreement. I will say that if a team comes along in restricted free agency and, you know, gets to something close to that, you know, Bertans level, Chicago might balk at that and just walk away. I think that's it's a possibility because they want to keep him, but I think there's a limit to how bad they want to. I think they're willing to move on if it's a certain price tag that's too much for them.
Shout out Davis Bertans for dropping 9 percentage points from three after getting his $80 million paycheck.
Grab the cash and run, man. Grab
it. Oh, that's a steal.
That is a tough deal, man. Hopefully he gets that back right, because it was a joy to watch him last season. He was one of the great bombers.
He was, I think, just to get off on a little tangent, I have always, like, for the last year and a half, called Duncan Robinson the third best shooter in the world behind Steph, Clay. I think Duncan Robinson is third. And a lot of people, a lot of my local friends are like, no, he's not. Like, he's got to do it longer. I'm like, dude, watch him play, because Duncan Robinson hits more insane shots than anyone not named Steph or Clay. And I think Davis Bertans last year was number four. Like last year.
He was definitely right there. Absolutely.
But now it's like, ugh. He gets a lot of shots, a lot of open shots, but gotta make them count.
Does it seem like to you, this is kind of our last point before we finish up, doesn't it feel like to you, or seem like, I don't know if it was maybe that one game I was watching, it's almost like he shoots better contested than uncontested. Like uncontested, it's like, oh, it's a brick every time. Contested, it's like he's hitting like end of the quarter shots, fading away in the left corner. I'm like, all right,
you just nailed the exact possession I was going to talk about. This was from last year, a random game he played last year. He caught the ball at the baseline about, I'm going to say, 12 feet out, right? Like not 3-point range, but mid range. Instead of taking a mid ranger, he takes two dribbles to the corner, to the left corner, waits until his guy closes out, then falls down shooting, fading into the bench, and it goes in. I'm like, man, Popovich would kill him if he was still in the Spurs doing that.
No doubt. Most players, that's a low percentage shot, but for Bertans, he read his percentages all over the court. He knows his comfort level in that situation. He said, like, that's a better shot for me. By the way,
he should be in San Antonio. I still can't believe that. It's been 2 years. I still can't believe the Spurs traded him thinking they had Marcus Morris.
And then Marcus said, nah.
Oh, man. Like, Bertans would be feasting in San Antonio.
That would be so nice. That would be so nice, man. Oh, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, right? But, Shane, I think that brings us to the end of our conversation. I want to thank you again for offering your time this evening. Always a great time to dive into these topics with you as it pertains to the NBA at large. Before you head out, why don't you let the listeners and viewers know where they can find you on Twitter if they want to get connected with you and your work that you offer.
For sure, Aaron. This is an awesome show that you've put on. Thanks for having me on again. And you can find me on Twitter at YoungNBA. Very simple. If you care about Instagram, if you like it, Shane Young NBA there. And my written work will be on Forbes Sports. I might have a couple different pieces at other outlets coming up soon. Maybe not. We'll see. But just for the time being, I'm going to have a piece out, I believe, what's today? Thursday. So maybe in the next couple of days. Think I'm going to talk about Steph Curry a little bit and kind of do a little check-in on what he's doing so far through 25 games.
He's back to the MVP level. I love it. Well, good stuff, man. Always glad to have you on. And with the listeners and viewers, be sure to check out Business Casual Basketball. Our content is going to be at bcbasketball.info if you want to take a look at our blog posts and some other resources that are available to you there. And then, of course, BC Basketball 2 is where you can find us on Twitter and Instagram if you want to get connected with us on social media. So until next time, guys, enjoy your evening, rest of your day here. Enjoy this NBA season. And we'll be coming back at you with some more NBA analysis real soon. Take care.